It's baffled scholars for two millennia. It is a puzzle made of multidimensional elements. An enigma with roots that reach back to the dawning of time, perhaps before. Daniel explained part of it. Ezekiel and Isaiah had glimpses into it. John saw it all for the time of the end. That time is now. Join Derek and Sharon Gilbert on a journey that spans the course of history. From Eden to Mount Hermon. From Hermon to Babel. From Babel to Rome. From Rome to the cross. And from there to us. Biblical prophecy is coming true before your eyes. And to understand it, you must discern the times both then and now. It's time to unravel the threads of this all-encompassing prophetic paradox. It's time to unravel Revelation.
Back to the two witnesses. Welcome to Unraveling Revelation from Skywatch TV. I'm Derek Gilbert.
I'm Sharon Gilbert, and we are finally back to the two witnesses. We circled back.
Yes, yes, we
did. Long way around, though.
We did. All of the really cool broadcasters do that anymore.
Well, we do, don't we? Yeah, well, let's not even get into that.
Right.
But we're finally back, and we've got lots to talk to you about it. I think that this is an important study.
It is. Unlike many, well, I don't want to compare us with any other teachers, because all seeing aspects of the elephant, like that old story about the blind man, each feeling a piece of the elephant.
Yes,
and some think
it's a
tree,
trunk,
some think it's a snake.
Yeah.
We're just trying to get a picture of what's in front of us.
That's all. And honestly, next time we do this study, which we will, once we finally wrap it up and the day will come, please, Lord, come back soon, then we'll probably see more. It's just like in Gilbert House Fellowship.
Mm-hmm.
We see lots more each time we read through the verses.
Right, right. And that's our online Bible study, which we produce and upload every Sunday. It's an audio study only. But we've been through the Bible once, and we're finding as we're going through the Bible the second time now that we're seeing things that we didn't see the last time. So
the first time through, there were things in there that surprised me, and I've been reading the Bible for over 60 years.
Well.
Yeah, I have.
Well, that's what we're hoping to do is just share what we're seeing right now, and anything we get right, we'll give the Lord the credit for that. And things that we totally miss, well, that's on us, and probably on me, because, again, she's the smart one of this team.
Well, I think we're both going there.
Well, the two witnesses, there is a tendency in many studies of Revelation to look for symbolism and to perhaps look for naturalistic explanations.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the simple understanding of the two witnesses is that these literally are two prophets, and we can see by the powers that they wield,
mm-hmm,
and their mission that these are prophets, that two prophets are sent back by God to deliver a message, but also more than that,
yes,
we'll get into the legal aspect of this too.
Well, let's go back to something else that you might or might not have connected with us. We've already discussed it briefly sometime weeks ago when we were talking about the identity of the two witnesses.
Right, right.
And we said that we felt that there were a number of reasons why it was probably Moses and Elijah.
Right.
We won't go into all of those now, but one of the places we see that occurring, Moses and Elijah with Jesus,
mm-hmm,
is on the top of the Mount of Transfiguration, which
right,
is also known as Mount Hermon.
Yeah, I know traditionally it's Mount Tabor, which is in the north of Israel, but since Jesus climbed a very high mountain, according to the gospel accounts, shortly after Caesarea Philippi,
mm-hmm,
the only very high mountain in the vicinity of Caesarea Philippi, which is near the ancient city of Dan,
mm-hmm,
the northern border of Israel, is Mount Hermon.
Yes.
So that is the most likely. And there are supernatural reasons for it to be Mount Hermon as well.
Yes.
Jesus was making a serious point, not just to his disciples and his followers who understood what he was saying, but also sending a message into the spirit realm.
Oh, you often say he was sending up a flare, and I think that it was indeed a flare, and he was also telling the spirit realm, you're about to go on trial.
That's a really, yeah, I think that's a very good point. Of course, the story at Caesarea Philippi is where Jesus has that very famous conversation with the disciples, where he asks them, who men say that I am? And they say, well, some say you're a prophet, some say you're this, some say you're that. And then he asks Peter, who do you say that I am? Mm-hmm. And Peter says, you are the Christ, the Son of the living God. And Jesus responds, blessed are you, Simon Barjona, for man has not revealed this to you, but my Father in heaven.
Yes.
And then he says, on this rock, I will build my church. Now, there are some who will look at Peter's name, which is very similar to the Greek Petros, which means mm-hmm. rock. Hence, Peter could be, you know, rocky in modern terms. But he's standing in front of a 9,200-foot mountain that was known as the Mount of Assembly for El, the creator god of the Canaanites, not mm-hmm. El Elyon or El Shaddai, the god of the Bible.
He was taking dominion of a mountain that had right. always belonged to him. The Lord God Almighty created that mountain. It was assumed, it was taken over, it was annexed by the fallen realm when the watchers came down. So it was known at the time to the disciples, they grew up knowing this, that that was the mountain that belonged to the god El.
Mm-hmm.
Now, El had a threshing floor on the top of that mountain mm-hmm. that was part of a ritual that was to call the dead so that they could be revivified, brought back to living bodies mm-hmm. once again. That's what the texts claim.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Jesus went up there, and you know that wonderful verse where we're told, do you not know you will judge the angels?
Mm-hmm.
Well, we see a picture of that, a tantalizing hint of that in the Transfiguration, because we have Moses and Elijah, humans that have gone on to glory, and they are with the Lord as he is showing the disciples and the fallen realm, this is what will be happening very soon. I'm going to go to my Father. I will be part and parcel of the divine Godhead once again.
Mm-hmm.
And I will reign and rule and judge you along with these human beings.
Right.
Because, what is it, Psalm 82?
Psalm 82, the courtroom scene in heaven. Yeah, which is really fascinating. Now, the text that Sharon was talking about, by the way, as far as the threshing floor of El and summoning the dead, those are what scholars call the Rephaim texts.
Yeah, it's not in the Bible,
no.
But it was well understood at the time, and right. secular scholars understand this.
Right, but only within the last 40 years. We are literally the first generation to have access to these ancient texts.
Yeah,
they were discovered,
which is exciting.
Yeah, discovered in Syria at the site of an ancient kingdom called Ugarit. Discovered about 1922 when a mm-hmm. shepherd fell into a cave and stumbled onto these clay tablets. The city, Ugarit, had been destroyed in the late Bronze Age collapse. The Eastern Mediterranean, all along the coast, these raiders came and ravaged everything and preserved these texts because the city was burned. So the clay tablets were essentially fired and baked underneath the ruins of the city.
Amazing.
And then found 100 years ago. But many of them are still being debated and mm-hmm. translated to this day. And so only within the last 40 years have scholars agreed, yeah, there mm-hmm. was a cult of the dead around ancient Israel that drew in and seduced the Israelites. And part of these texts, yes, were these rituals, necromancy rituals, summoning the Rephaim, the spirits of the deceased Nephilim, to the summit of Mount Hermon to be resurrected, revivified.
Yeah.
So as Jesus, we got the gospel accounts where he climbs the mountain with Peter, James, and John, mm-hmm. and he's turned into a being of light. And it's on that mountain that he had just announced his divinity at the foot of the mountain,
yeah.
in front of the Grotto of Pan, by the way, which were the gates of hell that he referred to. The gates of hell, they're right over here, because that cave was believed to be the entrance to the netherworld.
Uh-huh.
And we had the opportunity to go there twice now and preach.
You've gotten to preach right in front of that cave, right in front of the entrance to
makes
hell.
The hair on your arm stand up when you realize what Jesus was saying and where he was saying it. On this rock right behind me, and you pointed out there's a huge boulder.
Yeah, right behind where you were preaching. You yeah. just didn't see it.
But then the gates of hell, the Grotto of Pan, which was the source of the River Jordan back mm-hmm. in the day. It's shifted since because of earthquakes. But then he climbs the mountain and announces his divinity to the spirit realm.
Mm-hmm.
And then from there, he comes down the mountain. Luke chapter 11 points out that he has just come down from the mountain where it was believed that El and his consort Asherah, whose epithet was the dragon lady,
oh, yeah.
and the 70 sons of El, representing the gods of the nations, mm-hmm. held court. He went and sent his 70 disciples ahead of him into Galilee.
Yes. Well, hold that thought on the number 70, because Tom Horn has told you and me privately, and he's probably written about this as well, too. So if you're sitting there going, oh, I've read that. Tom talks about how the divine counsel concept that Mike Heiser has been teaching for a long time now, that concept, that divine throne room, courtroom scene, is played out in the Feast of Booths.
Yes.
We have the divine assembly that includes all of us in our eternal places around the throne, around in Jerusalem.
Mm-hmm.
And when Jesus stood there with this transfigured Moses and Elijah, what did the disciples say?
Let's build booths and stay here. It is good for us to be here. Because they didn't know it. They were so terrified, they didn't know what to say.
But what they wanted to build. What if they got it?
That is a really interesting thought for a couple of reasons. Mike Heiser put me onto a paper by an Israeli scholar whose name I'm going to forget, a woman who's at one of the universities in Israel, wrote a paper a few years ago about the Feast of Tabernacles, the Feast of Booths, or Sukkot, which was the main festival in the annual calendar. It's held in the fall, 6 months after the Passover and the Feast of Feast of Unleavened Bread.
It's not been fulfilled yet.
Not been fulfilled yet in the prophetic timeline of the fulfillment of the feasts. This was a 7-day festival, and on the 7 days, the Israelites were instructed to slaughter on day one 13 bulls, day two 12 bulls, day three 11 bulls, day four. By the time you get to the end of the 7 days, you've slaughtered 70 bulls. Now, this scholar compared this to another pagan festival from the northern Syrian city of Emar, where the chief god Dagon, who is the same as El, just a different name for the same entity. There was a festival in the spring at the same time as the Feast of Unleavened Bread. It was held in the first month of the year, the month Nisan, and they would slaughter 70 lambs for Dagon and the 70 gods of the city, the 70 gods representing all the other gods of the nations. So this is a reversal. When God gave it, because this festival from northern Syria was much older than the one that was given to Moses on Mount Sinai.
Right.
So God was reversing what the pagans had been doing, the pagan Amorites around the Euphrates River region, for their chief god. And this idea that they had a chief god, Dagon or El, who then had 70 sons representing the gods of the nations. Through the Feast of Tabernacles, God was saying to Moses and the Israelites, these represent the gods of the nations from whom I am redeeming you. Mm-hmm. I am saving you from them. This was the only festival during the year where the Israelites, the Jews, were commanded to slaughter so many bulls.
Wow.
Yeah, they would often, you know, do more sheep, goats, doves, whatever, but 70 bulls during a festival, that's a lot of beef.
Oh.
But there's a specific reason for it. Again, nothing in the Bible is there at random. It's nothing by accident, nothing just thrown in for special effects. There's
every
always a
reason. Every punctuation mark in the original is important.
Right.
Let's go to Revelation 11 and read some stuff.
Well, let's do that after we take a break. We will get to the relevance to the two witnesses as Unraveling Revelation continues after this.
Call now and get the companion to the Book of Enoch Special Collection, featuring the original Book of Enoch in beautifully bound hardback edition and both of Dr. Michael Heiser's groundbreaking companion guides to the Book of Enoch, along with the shocking expose, Fallen Angels and Ancient Aliens on DVD. This is an exclusive offer for our Skywatch television audience. Yours for a donation of $35 plus shipping and handling. Volumes 1 and 2 of the Companion Guides to Enoch unveil what most of the modern church has never heard regarding how the sin of the watchers in Enoch 6 through 16 helped frame the mission of Jesus, how the descriptions of the Antichrist, the Messiah, the end times day of the Lord, and the final judgment connect to Genesis 6 and the Nephilim. This and so much more. Plus, you will also receive on DVD the Book of Enoch, Fallen Angels and Ancient Aliens, an exclusive production with Dr. Michael Heiser regarding the blatant lies of ancient astronaut theory and the horrifying nature of fallen angels and alien abduction. This DVD is a must-have. But that's not all. You'll also receive the beautifully printed hardback edition of the original historical Book of Enoch from Defender Publishing. perfect for assisting serious researchers and students in the study of the Bible and the early age. Sold separately, these items hold a retail value of $90. Yours now for your donation of only $35 plus shipping and handling while supplies last. Whether you've read the Book of Enoch or want to journey through it for the first time, without a doubt, you'll find the companion to the Book of Enoch Special Collection absolutely essential. Order now at SkyWatchTVStore.com or call 1-844-750-4985.
Welcome back to Unraveling Revelation from SkyWatch TV. I'm Derek Gilbert.
I'm Sharon Gilbert. It's hard to believe we're already half over. We want to remind you that even though a lot of things have been happening in Israel, that, and praise God, they're at peace so far, Lord, mm-hmm. That we still plan on going there in October of this year, 2021. And if you want to go along, we encourage you to go to skywatchinisrael.com very quickly, because if everyone who has said they want to go and put down a deposit, we've already got 3 busloads.
Yeah, that's a lot of folks to move in and out of some of these sites.
50 because people per bus.
That's right. So we're looking at about 150 on the tour. Now, there are some ministries that will take much larger tours. We like to keep them more intimate, because we like to do a lot of teaching at these sites. Joining us will be our colleagues from SkyWatch TV, Donna Howell and Allie Henson, and Messianic Rabbi Zev Porat, who's got some fantastic teachings at the Mount Overlook outside Nazareth. Was it Procopius was the name of the mountain?
Yes.
Where Jesus was, they wanted to throw him off the mountain, and he got away through the crowd. But also the actual historical sites of the resurrection, the burial tomb of Jesus, and the site of the crucifixion, which now is a parking lot. So it's not on the normal tours.
Exactly. They're not the traditional sites that have been all developed in there, but they're right there, and they make sense. And they're in a spot where Derek's going to give a special teaching.
Oh, yeah.
So you don't want to miss this.
Connection between Mount Hermon and Mount of Olives.
Oh, yeah.
Well, so anyway, skywatchinisrael.com is the website for more information. And Lipkin Tours assures us that if for whatever reason, whether it's security or a vaccine mandate, that we need to reschedule the tour. Mm-hmm. And if you cannot accommodate the new dates, if that doesn't work for your schedule, they will refund all deposit, all monies. So you can find out more, a sample itinerary and breakdown of cost at skywatchinisrael.com.
Amen. Let's do some reading.
Revelation chapter 11, I'll just start with verse 1 again. Then I was given a measuring rod like a staff, and I was told, rise and measure the temple of God and the altar and those who worship there. And the word translated temple here is naos, which means just the holy place. Yeah, leave out the court. And in fact, that's verse 2 says that specifically, but do not measure the court outside the temple. Leave that out, for it is given over to the nations. And they will trample the holy city for 42 months. So that's 3.5 years now we're talking about here, which is significant in the context of a 7-year great tribulation.
Exactly. And I really do believe that the two witnesses appear pretty much day one of that 7-year tribulation period, because they are killed halfway through.
Okay. And so to clarify now, because we had to talk about this yesterday as I was trying to get my head around this to make sure I understood correctly, the events we're reading here in chapter 11 are sort of parenthetical.
Well, it's an explanation. Let me just take you aside, John, and explain a couple of things to you. One is that the Gentiles are going to be covering up. They're going to be trampling. Mm-hmm. And they're doing that now.
Right.
They are doing that now, but the day will come when that will stop.
In terms of chronology, though, the timing, it's easy for us as we read this to assume that all of this is happening sequentially. But this 3.5-year
period.
Seals
are sequential.
Right.
Seventh seal begins the trumpets.
Right.
So we've read through, 6 trumpets now?
Yes.
So this is sort of explaining, think of those 6 trumpets as trying to get the world's attention during one of two things. It's either the lead up to day one, or it is the first 3.5 years. The Lord is trying to get their attention. He's announcing over and over and over again, pay attention because I am coming back. I've been telling you. You don't believe me. Look at all the things that are happening to the world. Check your Bibles, people, because that is where I told you these things would happen. And then the angel says to John, I want you to take a look at what's happening in Jerusalem.
Mm-hmm.
So he's looking at the temple.
So this is happening concurrently with the events of the first six trumpets, while, you know, the flaming mountain from the sky and Wormwood and all of that, this 3.5 year period includes all of that.
Yes, I agree. Right. I believe that, just to make it clear, I believe it's very likely the first six trumpets are the first 3.5 years.
Right.
Why?
Okay.
Because the seventh trumpet begins the bold judgments.
Right, right.
That is all judgment.
Wrath.
Time is gone. In fact, we will even read either next week or the week after that the angels are rejoicing because before that first bold judgment is given, mm-hmm. they're all saying, the earth belongs to you now. In other words, he's finished reading the document,
yep.
and now it's just judgment. He has taken back, he has redeemed the earth and all the humans upon it. We're told that these witnesses are going to come. And this is, remember how we had the 144,000 who were sealed?
Yes, yes.
They're also sealed on day one.
Right, okay. So again, just to make sure, because again, I was having trouble getting my head around this. So
mm-hmm.
sixth seal, great earthquake. Rapture of the church, as we discussed with David W.
Sixth
Lowe some months
ago. Seal.
Right, sixth seal. Then the seventh seal begins the trumpet.
Exactly.
The trumpets.
It's like they're nested within that seventh seal.
Right.
All of these trumpets.
Yeah.
And then nested within the seventh trumpet are all of the bold judgments.
Right. And the two witnesses appear with the first trumpet.
I believe so.
Right.
I believe
okay.
that the minute the Lord has got his people out,
right.
that he's trying to get everybody's attention.
Right. So trying to make sense of the timeline so that it's because my assumption was as reading it, it's like, wait a minute, this doesn't make sense because we've got six trumpets, but then we've got 3.5 years. How can that be? No. Again, the angel has taken John aside and said, while all of this has been going on, this has been happening in Jerusalem.
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
Now, these two witnesses are there for a reason. Because legally,
mm-hmm.
the Lord says if you're going to prosecute and accuse someone of something, you've got to have at least two witnesses.
Right.
And they have to agree on what happened.
Okay.
He sent his two witnesses. Why? It's not just the humans. This has to do with judging the fallen realm.
You will judge the angels.
Yes.
Right. And this is why, one of the reasons that we believe it's the same two witnesses who were with Jesus at the Transfiguration on Mount Hermon. They were there and witnessed that. Now they're testifying and preaching.
It was like John, along with Peter and James, was looking into the future, a future that he was going to be called up to see in his very final years upon the
right,
earth.
Right.
He would see the Lord begin this trial.
Okay. All right. Now it's making sense to me.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I wanted to stop and make sure, again, that I had this all clear.
I'm glad you did, because I think it is confusing for a lot of people.
Right.
And if you disagree with us, then, you know, you're not alone, because try to get everybody on the same chart.
I was going to say, based on what I thought and believed, even just a month or two ago, I disagree with myself quite often. Go back and look at some of the early studies we've done. Well, Unraveling Revelation, I think I'm okay with everything that we've done here over the last 2 years. But when I look back over my walk of faith over the last 25 years. There's a lot of stuff I
if
used to believe.
If you're not growing, then there's a problem.
So we reserve the right to be wrong.
Yeah.
So Revelation 11, verse 3, and I will grant authority to my two witnesses, again, we believe Elijah and Moses, and they will prophesy for 1,260 days clothed in sackcloth.
Why are they clothed in sackcloth? Because they're in mourning.
Yes, yes.
They're in mourning. They're seeing what's going on. The temple is overrun by Gentiles. The temple is overrun by fallen entities. There are pagan activities
mm-hmm,
taking
mm-hmm.
place. They're in mourning.
And here's the other interesting thing that just occurred to me. Because John was given a measuring rod to measure the temple, this looking in the future suggests that there will be a temple once again on the Temple Mount.
That is a really, really good point, because you and I have said a number of times that because we see that the sacrifices are stopped by the Antichrist.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't gotten to that yet, but we will eventually. And you probably have already studied it. It's assumed that if there are sacrifices taking place,
right.
that there is a temple in which to do it.
Right.
That could be done in a tabernacle.
Right. And we've talked with Jim Barfield of the Copper mm-hmm. Scroll Project, who suggests there's a hidden cave at Qumran that may contain the tabernacle of Moses, the tent of meeting.
Yes, and in fact, the very footprint of Qumran
yes.
is an upside down footprint of Jerusalem.
Yeah, it's like a reversed map of Jerusalem, yeah, sort of coded in the layout of Qumran.
Yeah, it is.
So, yes, it's a possibility that they may not need a temple, but just a tabernacle. So the temple actually referring mm-hmm. to the holy place, not necessarily a big temple building.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. These are the two olive trees and the two lampstands that stand before the Lord of the earth. This is the same imagery that Zechariah uses in Zechariah chapter mm-hmm. 4, the two olive trees, the two lampstands. Not the same characters that Zechariah saw.
No, he saw Joshua and
Zerubbabel.
Yes.
Yeah. And if anyone would harm them, fire...
The priest Joshua, not Joshua the son of Nun.
Right, right. Joshua was the high priest in the mm-hmm. time of the return and the rebuilding of the temple. And if anyone would harm them, fire pours from their mouth and consumes their foes. If anyone would harm them, this is how he was doomed to be killed.
Boy, that's an interesting thing. It's almost like a dragon.
It kind of is, isn't
word it? There, I looked it up, that's used for pours forth from the mouth is the idea of shooting out.
And considering the fact that they eventually get killed by the beast, who is a Mesopotamian concept of a dragon,
mm-hmm.
it's appropriate.
Yeah.
They have the power to shut the sky that no rain may fall during the days of their prophesying, just like Elijah in the days of Ahab. And they have the power over the waters to turn them into blood and to strike the earth with every kind of plague, like Moses
like
in Egypt.
Like Moses. Now keep reading. Let's go through.
As often as they desire. When they have finished their testimony, the beast that rises from the bottomless pit or the abyss will make war on them and conquer them and kill them, and their dead bodies will lie in the street of the great city that symbolically, or the Greek word is actually spiritually, is called Sodom in Egypt, where their Lord was crucified.
Okay, first of all, we know this is Jerusalem because it says where their Lord was crucified.
Right.
We also find it interesting, at least I do, that it says it's comparing Jerusalem to Sodom and Egypt. Well, Egypt kind of makes sense if we're seeing these activities done by Moses. Probably Moses, that are very much like things that Moses did, because this is taking place in Egypt.
Mm-hmm.
The Lord was judging the small g gods
right.
through various plagues and other miracles. Sodom, though, we're going to run low on time really quickly.
The connection between Sodom and Egypt, when Jacob died, Joseph led a funeral procession from Egypt to Hebron, but Hebron is southwest of Jerusalem, which mm-hmm. means it's west of the Dead Sea. He took them east of the Dead Sea to the threshing floor of Atad, which is beyond the Jordan, meaning east of the Jordan River. He crossed over into what was Moab. And a scholar by the name of Dr. Philip Sylvia, who leads the dig, he's the scientific advisor for the dig at Tal el Hammam, which is ancient Sodom, argues that this was that location because the Canaanites saw the mourning at the threshing floor of Atad. They said, this is grievous mourning for the Egyptians. Therefore, the place was named Abel Mizraim, which means meadow or place of mourning of the Egyptians.
Mm-hmm.
He argues that the 7 days of mourning took place there at the ancient site of Sodom, the threshing floor of Sodom.
And again, we've got a threshing floor, just like on Mount Hermon. That's really interesting. Because
spiritual portal.
Yes, we think it's a spiritual portal. Well, we will start on these verses next week, because we also want to talk about that beast rising from the bottomless pit.
Oh, yeah. So much to get into. And again, another 3.5-day period, which is not coincidental, because we see that not just in the resurrection of Jesus Christ, but we also see that in a number of ancient pagan texts. It's another reversal. God
yeah.
taking what the pagans had been conned into believing by the fallen angels that they worshipped as gods and reversing it, turning it back on them. Again, nothing in the Bible is random.
No.
Which is what makes this study so fascinating.
I know it.
Thank you for watching. This is Unraveling Revelation from Skywatch TV.
Unraveling Revelation is part of Skywatch TV, a viewer-supported ministry. To learn more about Skywatch TV and the work of our sister ministry, Whispering Ponies Ranch, please visit our website, skywatchtv.com. You can support us through your prayers and by taking advantage of the special offers at skywatchtvstore.com. And please join us for our weekly study of the Bible, verse by verse, in chronological order, online at gilberthouse.org.